From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. You know, every once in a while, we like to do a follow-up episode. And this one is a follow-up to our last episode, number 85, which we called Ascended Fiction. In that episode, Ascended Fiction, it's about myths and rumors around L. Ron Hubbard's death and afterlife. And a lot of that episode was about this idea of hidden knowledge. And so on this follow-up, we're going to take a look at that idea a bit more through some different perspectives. Now, I'm not going to really be recapping anything from last episode, so if you haven't already listened, I'd recommend that you download that one first and listen to it. Okay, so as I was putting together Ascended Fiction, I was reading a lot of Scientology websites and listening to that David Miscavige speech over and over again, and I just kept getting like these little dings in my head, where it's like, ding, wait, that sounds really Christian. And it happened once, and then it happened again, and it just kept happening. And see, Scientology is this totally different religion than Christianity. You can tell that because the scriptures and the practices are very different from each other. But it also seems that L. Ron Hubbard, as he was making the religion, also was drawing inspiration from Christianity, at least stylistically. And now I mentioned this briefly in Ascended Fiction, when David Miscavige starts saying things like,
"The body is a physical object. It is not the being himself. He has simply moved on to his next step."
But this is actually pretty mild compared to what happens later in that address.
So now I'd like to introduce Mr. Norman Starkey, who is going to perform the funeral service for L. Ron Hubbard, as written by L. Ron Hubbard. Please welcome him.
And so this service that Norman Starkey reads, he never uses the word God, he never uses the word Jesus, not once, but it still sounds just so Christian to me.
"The spirit is just a thing to send for pence to some strange heaven. Let the body now draw away to be consumed to ashes and to dust, in earthly and in cleanly fire. To be no more, no more."
It's words like heaven and dust that just keep reminding me of my own religious upbringing and the secret knowledge that's foundational to it. And so after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about lizards and fruit. And I'll also read an update from Tony Ortega regarding desk chairs and cool cigarettes. We'll also hear from two anonymous mothers who left us voicemails about the secrets they keep. And finally, I'll also tell you what my source at the Scientology Info Center had to say about Ascended Fiction.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about...
"We've all been suffering ever since."
The podcast about...
"The unknown."
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
While I was working on Ascended Fiction, I went to Vanessa Zoltan's apartment.
Hello?
Hey, Vanessa, I'm here.
Hey, I'll come right down.
Okay, I'll see you soon.
Bye.
Vanessa is trained as a chaplain, and I wanted her to retell me a story that I had heard a lot growing up in the Lutheran Church. It's the first story that they teach in Sunday school, the first story in my illustrated children's Bible. And for being a story about two naked people in a garden, it had a lot of strange parallels to the topic of secret and forbidden knowledge that I was looking into with the Scientologists. It's such a It's such a funny thing. Like, I think you have to start at the beginning.
Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So, yeah, he separates the heaven and the earth, and then he separates lightness from darkness. And it takes 6 days, right, for him to do all this. So it's heaven and the earth. He separates light and dark. He separates the land from the sea. He creates all the beasts. He's creating the world as we know it. And then on the sixth day, right before he rests, he creates man. Then on the seventh day, he was tired, so he rested. And then it's like sometime later, like he's orienting Adam to the Garden of Eden and is having Adam name all the plants and having Adam name all the livestock and all the beasts. And it's almost like God is like bringing all these things to Adam. He's like, here is this animal. And Adam is like, I will call that a bear. I will call that a groundhog. And then God realizes that Adam is probably lonely. And you don't know when this is. This is like day 72 or like, you know, or day 500. You have no idea how long it's been. And so God realizes that Adam is lonely. So he puts Adam into a deep sleep and creates woman from his rib. Adam sort of orients Eve to, you know, this place that they live, the Garden of Eden. And he's like, you know, I don't know, this is where the basil is, and this is where, you know, the corn is, or whatever he's showing her around. And then he's like, oh, by the way, there are these two trees. God said that we cannot eat from these trees. We will die if we eat from these trees. And they are the tree of knowledge and the tree of life. And, you know, he's like, don't touch these.
Don't touch these.
So a serpent comes. I mean, the serpent just tells Eve the truth. He's like, God lied to you. You will not die if you eat from these trees. And so Eve takes a piece of fruit from the tree of knowledge and then just sort of like very, like without a lot of explanation, hands a piece of the fruit to Adam and they eat from it. And then God comes and they hide from God because they're embarrassed that they're naked. And God is like, wait, how did you know that you were naked?
You ate
from the tree of knowledge. Why did you do that? And Adam is basically points to Eve and is like,
she made me do it.
And then Eve points to the snake and is like, he made me do the serpent because he's still on legs. And it's like, he made me do it. And so God punishes all of them for doing this. And so the serpent loses its arms and legs and has to slither on its belly and eat dust. Eve is more punished than Adam because Eve gets painful childbirth. And Adam's punishment is that he's going to have to toil. And so they get evicted. It feels like they're getting kicked out of their parents' basement and like are going to have to move into the city and survive on their own. Yeah, so they get kicked out of the Garden of Eden and we've all been suffering ever since.
But all for what? Like, what was the crime?
Part of the crime is just that they disobey God. But it also seems like God is upset because God had this knowledge over them. God had this power and this information over them. And now they know just as much as God.
So Eve is there with the serpent, right? And the serpent essentially says, taste the fruit from this tree and you'll become like God. You'll know things that you don't know now. That leaves Eve sitting there with the knowledge that she doesn't know everything she could. What do you think that Eve imagined the knowledge she didn't have to be like?
I would imagine that because all of her experiences are positive of the Garden of Eden, she would imagine that it's like more good news, right? I remember being sent to bed as a child. We had a strict bedtime, and I assumed that everything that happened after bedtime was just like a party and fun, when really probably my parents were like paying bills and like just doing things that they needed the kids to be in bed for. So I would imagine she thought that it was like interesting. It's like finding out how a magic trick is done, right?
Do you think she was surprised by what was revealed?
I mean, from the text, it sounds like she was just like, oh, shit, I'm naked. I wonder if she's sort of heartbroken, right? And that feeling that you get when you learn how a magic trick is done, where you're like, oh, that's it? Like, that's what I learned? That's so stupid. There's just a trap door. Whereas things were, like, prettier when you didn't know how it was all done.
It seems kind of messed up that God would create something and want it to be stupid. It kind of feels to me like the same thing as, like, oh no, having a pet rabbit and just basking in the knowledge that it's never going to question foreign policy or human morality or anything like that.
I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's important to keep secrets from innocent creatures, right? The comparison that it feels more like to me is that it's parental, and that feels well-intended. I guess that's the question, right? Why are you withholding the information? Are you withholding the information to protect yourself or to protect the other person?
Like, I think the serpent says, God doesn't want you to eat this because if you eat this, you will become like God and he will be less powerful.
Right. So you majorly think God was on a power trip.
How do you determine whether someone is withholding from you because they're being paternal? Like, I know better than you. Like, it's okay. Like, I know better than you. Just trust me on this one. Which is what I feel like this story is largely about. Versus what I feel has been leveled at Scientology, which is like, let's withhold information from you so that we can con and manipulate you into believing further. Like,
do you ever know your intentions as to why you do something? It always seems complicated, and that you have to, like, really discern. I don't know. I'm sure that Scientologists say that there's a really good reason why they withhold information. I'm sure there's a great justification for it internally. And it's easy to judge when you don't know what that justification is.
Hi, I was calling to tell you about some information that I've withheld from people for a very long time. It's a little bit crazy, but it's the truth.
At the end of last episode, we asked for you to call us and tell us a bit of secret or forbidden knowledge that you hold. Why do you hold it?
I actually have a 14-year-old daughter who lives with her father, and I just do not tell anybody about it. It's A, just too hard to talk about, and B, really just to explain it to people why she lives with her father is just not something that I want to relive and go through all the time. So anybody who knows me as a woman in her 30s without children who will never have children. Even my boyfriend who I'm with now actually does not know about her. So... yeah, there you go. Okay. Bye.
After Ascended Fiction aired, I sent a link to Tony Ortega, who writes that blog about Scientology, the underground bunker. Tony sent me an email back saying that he found a second source to back up some of Dylan Gill's claims about the Church of Spiritual Technology. He said that he got a comment on his website a while back from a Scientologist named Matt Pesch, who said, "There's a policy letter in the Green Volumes of Scientology, I believe it's Volume 1, where Hubbard writes about the need for an office for him in each church. He specifically states that no one is to sit in the chair, as he sometimes likes to occupy the offices without his body. I ran the construction of the LRH office in the Fort Harrison Hotel in Clearwater. There was a cotton rope across the front of the chair to prevent anyone from accidentally sitting in the chair. On the desk there was a beautiful heavy lighter and ashtray. There was also a pack of cool cigarettes. I never saw an LRH office without the cigarettes. I don't know if this is still the case these days. I left the Sea Org back in 2005. I don't know what to think about this. It's another source. And that's that. After the episode aired, I also sent an email to my source at the Scientology Info Center. And despite their previously prompt replies, I still have yet to hear anything back almost a week later. Of course, this could be due to the long Thanksgiving weekend, but usually they wrote back really quick. So who knows? I'll let you know if they ever write back.
Hey guys, I really appreciate everything you do. I currently withhold the amount of alcohol that I drink in a night, and I withhold that for my own sake, and I've withheld that for a long time. Is it right? At times I think yes. At times I think it makes me a better mother. And at times I think no, that I'm living a lie and that I'm hiding bottles. And I can't believe I'm being honest with this on the radio or on a podcast, but you asked and now I'm telling. This is a very real thing. I've been in and out of AA, and it's a huge factor in my life. I think about it every day. I think about trying to go a day without it, and it doesn't happen, no matter how much I will myself to do that. So, yes, withholding is the way I live my life every day, and that's the reality of alcoholism. Thanks for all that you do. I appreciate the podcast. Bye-bye.
Yeah, if you ever have something that you want to say to us, just give us a call. We're 765-374-5263. And often we have a specific question for you, like the one you heard on this episode, or the one we had a little while back about future archaeologists. And you can always call and leave us your responses to those questions, or your responses to episodes. But we're also just accepting voicemails of strange sounds that you run across in your daily life, like rumbles or screeches, gurgles, gargles, gargoyles. Again, we're 765-374-5263. And you can always email us your voice memos at hbmpodcast@gmail.com. Now, in this episode, you heard from Vanessa Zoltan. And in addition to being a chaplain, Vanessa is also the co-host of another podcast. It's called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
So we treat the secular text of Harry Potter as if it were a sacred text like the Bible or the Quran, because we think that sacred is an act, not a thing. So we think it's important to treat things you love as if it was sacred.
Now, this show, it's fantastic, and you can listen to it on any podcast app or at harrypottersacredtext.com. And we have a link up on our website, which is hbmpodcast.com. Also on our website, we have a gallery of my 10 favorite paintings of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Like, they're really weird. Like, in some of the paintings, the serpent has a human face and arms. Again, we're hbmpodcast.com. My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode with help from Bethany Denton. We're a part of KCRW's Independent Producer Project, where our editor is Nick White and our manager is Kristen Lepore. Music on this episode came from Swamp Dog, Phantom Fauna, and The Black Spot. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
Hi. When I'm having a conversation and I can see whoever I'm talking to searching for a word and I know exactly what they mean, I don't offer that word. And a lot of times it's because I just want to see what they say. I know what they mean already. I feel a little bit mean, but I also have been doing this as long as I can remember, and I kind of love it. I guess I could make the case that it's for their benefit that they get to find the word they're looking for, but it's probably more for my benefit and that I'm having a little entertaining game in my head while it's happening. I don't know if there's any right or wrong about it, or even good or bad, but I withhold knowledge all the time, and I thoroughly enjoy it. That's it. Peace.